Hour number two here, Christian Arcan Show, WEEI. We are Boston Sports Original. We are the home of the Boston Red Sox. Every second of every Red Sox game you can hear right here on these airwaves, WEEI. Even if the game's not on Nesson, if it's on a streaming service that maybe you don't subscribe to, we always have you right here on the old FM airwaves of WEEI 93.7 and all throughout New England. Not bragging, just saying. And I will continue taking phone calls about the Yankees, about Aaron Boone, about the terrible, terrible screw-ups that they've had, because while the Red Sox are killing it right now, I'm finding myself more attracted to the idea of the Yankees collapsing. I don't know why. It's twofold, okay? Because the Red Sox have done this before. The Red Sox have used the Yankees as like a stepladder to get to where they're trying to go earlier in the year. And then things changed a little bit with the Devers trade, and then they went in the tank for a while, and then they got better, and they've been holding steady ever since with a couple of hiccups along the road. And one of those hiccups just happened right before they started this series. And so for the second time in, I don't know, as many months, here the Yankees come again when the Red Sox need a little home cooking, and boom. Not only are the Red Sox righting the ship, but the Yankees are taking on water. And that is just great. One thing that happened, though, actually a bunch of things have happened with the Red Sox that have nothing to do with the Yankees, and I want to talk a little bit about that right now. I want to push the Yankees to the side, much like the Red Sox are doing in the standings at the moment. I'd like to push the Yankees to the side and just focus on the team, because there are still some questions and some question marks. One of them is the Walker Buehler to the bullpen move, which I don't think was met with a lot of resistance from anyone, from Buehler, from anybody else in the rotation. I don't think fans are particularly upset about this. I don't really think that this was a bad move, per se. The only thing I'm still not clear on is what the replacement for Buehler's going to be, because, yeah, Walker Buehler's not good, and he hasn't been a very good starter, but he is your fifth starter, and if you look at his numbers this month, they're not bad. Like, he's not going out there and getting bombed like Tanner Houck was, you know? Like, Tanner Houck, at the beginning of the year, every couple of starts, he'd give up like 12 runs in three innings. And Walker Buehler's not doing that. Walker Buehler's walking a lot of people, which is kind of funny. But, like, that's the big problem with Buehler. He's not going deep into games. And the reason he's not going deep into games is because he's walking tons of batters. He's made four starts this month, okay? In those four starts, he's pitched 20 and a third innings, which is not a good total. That means he's averaging five innings per start, which you need more than that. But that's also not terrible. It's not like he's averaging three innings per start. Five innings is weak, but it's not. If he was your ace, then I'd say, yeah, okay. Or even your second or third starter, I'd say, okay, you need more than that. He's your fifth starter. In this month, 20 and a third innings, he's averaging just over five innings per start. Here are his numbers. The record is 1-1, and his ERA is 3.98. Let me say that again. 1-1 with a 3.98 ERA this month. And that's going to be his final numbers for the month as a starter anyway, because he's been kicked to the bullpen. He has walked 13 batters and struck out 11 over those four starts. Not good. Certainly not good. He's given up 9 earned runs, 3 homers, and 21 hits. So he's given up over a hit an inning. He's walking the park, like he's walking the whole yard. And he's not going deep into games. Those are all reasons why he shouldn't be at the top of the rotation, or even your second or third starter. But am I crazy for thinking that that's not terrible for your fifth guy? Am I crazy for not thinking that it's not good, but it's acceptable, right? Like, that's not acceptable? 1-1 with a 3.98 ERA from your number five starter, that's unacceptable. If they had a much better replacement for Buehler coming up through the wings, I'd say, yeah, fine, okay, then, you know, throw in Peyton Tolley and let's see what he looks like. And I know he's been good in the minors, but are you really ready to throw him out there against major league hitting and say, yeah, kid, go out there. He'd be our number five starter down the stretch in this pennant race. I think I'd rather stick with Buehler and his walks, honestly. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to tell you that he's been great. I'm not even trying to tell you he's been good. But I can tell you that in the month of July, he was 1-0 with a 3.57 ERA. This month, he's 1-1 with a 3.98. In June, he had an ERA in the 11s, and his ERA was close to 5 in May. So there's we've seen Bad Bueller this year. Bad Bueller. We've seen him. We know what that looks like. We've all experienced the bad Walker Bueller experience, and it's ugly. But we're not going through that right now. We're just not. And so I wonder, I look at that move, and I wonder exactly what the reasoning for it is. Because I don't understand what they're going to do to replace him. Are we talking about Richard Fitz and a bullpen game? Is that something you want to really mess with this team right now? You want to start having bullpen games where you may need to use like 5 or 6 relievers? Is that the route you want to go down? I feel like this team's not built for that. I feel like this team isn't built to have that kind of operation with their bullpen. Their bullpen gets stretched really thin right now as it is. And that's without them having long bullpen games where a whole bunch of different relievers have to come in and pitch. You know, like that just seems to me like a much faster way to like expedite bullpen burnout. And I don't think that they should be looking that way. The reason why you have a guy like Bueller or some middling pitcher at the back end of your rotation is to eat up innings, to save the bullpen. That's the whole point of it, right? Isn't that the whole idea? You don't want a guy out there who's only going 3-4 innings, sure, but he's not doing it. He's going about, you know, on average 5 innings per start. And then there's 4 you got to make up with the bullpen. You go with Fitz for 3 and then what? The bullpen for 6? Is that better? How's that better? I don't really get that. And I don't want this to sound like I'm sitting here simping for Walker Bueller, because I haven't exactly been in love with Walker Bueller this year. I thought that I expected more from him. I think there's times where he looked like maybe he didn't belong in the rotation. Certainly in the month of June, he had an awful month of June and some really, really bad starts then, where I thought, you know, DFA was on the table. But I feel like those days are well behind us, well behind us. He had a good July. He's having a not good, but acceptable August. And then they go for this, which, you know, okay, sure. But now what are you going to do? I feel like this one wasn't thought through all the way. And maybe there's much more to it than I'm giving him credit for. Like, numbers that point to why bullpen starts are better, whatever it is, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what those people do. But I just think that it seems like you're going in the wrong direction with that. And while it would be nice to have a fifth starter who can go deeper into games and who doesn't walk people as much and whatever, you know, you're not getting slop from this guy. You're getting some pretty decent starts. You're getting some pretty decent production. And if we're just talking about eating innings and keeping everybody rested and not burning everybody out here in the last month of the season, I think Walker Bueller's a better option than whatever else is they're trying to do. Because I don't really get it. I'm really not clear on what this plan is. 617-779-7937. Not to mention they haven't explained it either. Be nice if they explained it. You know, yeah, this is what we're doing. Here's who's going to get the starts. This is it. Instead, it's not Walker Bueller's going to pitch out of the bullpen. Okay. So, and what? And so who's going to get his starts? Well, smoke bomb. They run away. It's like, all right, well, it'd be nice if you explained that. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones. Wally is in Fall River. Hi, Wally.
Yeah, what's up, Christian? It's been a beautiful weekend so far. Beautiful weather.
Oh, hasn't it?
Ah, what a beautiful weather outside. We went to the beach. We were listening to the game, and we were happy as clams.
Attaboy.
Came home, had a beautiful barbecue. But as far as Bob Bueller, you should just leave him where he is. I mean, he's a fifth starter. You can't expect miracles. Maybe they can straighten him out. But you look at the Yankees. They're just they came in into this series, Christian. They had 14 home runs in 2 games. And the Red Sox had one of the worst losses I can remember in a long time when they blew that game to Baltimore.
Yes.
But baseball is strange. You can never tell what will happen. But as far as the schedule, the Yankees have a mushy schedule. The Red Sox are going to have to earn that wild card. Them last 6 games are tough. You're playing against 2 top teams in the league. But everything's going good so far. Maybe Justin Slayton will come back, fortify the bullpen. But everything's looking good. The main thing I think with them is they gotta. When you have men in scoring position and less than two outs, you gotta get them runners in. Otherwise, that's gonna bite them again. I mean, they've had trouble with that all year. I don't know how they fix it. They seem to have fixed it a little bit, but they just can't get back in that rut again.
Yeah, you're right, Wally. Thanks for the call. Thanks for checking in, buddy. Always good to hear from you. Glad you had a nice day yesterday. I had a nice day yesterday. I went to the Marshfield Fair yesterday with my wife and son, who was 3 years old. It was very hot yesterday, like very hot, like oppressively hot. We parked the car. We're walking over to the fairgrounds. I'm like sweating already. I was like, okay, this may be a short trip. As many of you know, people at the fairground hate to see me coming because I get over to the Papa Shot and I clean them out. I leave them in ruins. I leave them in tatters. They have no stuffed animals left. They have no basketball jerseys left. They have to shut down. It's a terrible thing. Like I feel kind of bad. I'm playing within the rules. It's not like I'm out there cheating or anything. I'm just shooting the ball. But I leave them in financial ruin. And so they see me coming. They're like, oh, don't come over here. Go to the other one. There's Papa Shots all over the fair. They're like, don't come to mine. Don't come to mine. Don't come to mine. I got to tell you, my shot was a little bit off yesterday. A little bit off. I still won a couple of things for I won this big sloth. So the way they have it is you can do, you give them $10 and you can get 7 shots. And if you make 2, then you get a big stuffed animal. Or you can get 5, and if you make 2, you get a jersey. And they had all these, you know, probably knockoff jerseys kicking around there. It's like Devin Booker and, you know, Ray Giannis and Wembanyama and all these, you know, basketball jerseys kicking around. And so I'm looking at it, and I don't have a big jersey collection anymore. I used to have a big jersey collection. I used to be a big jersey guy. I know, it's embarrassing, but I used to have a big, big jersey collection. Now it's like much more modest. But if you can add to it for $10 just by hitting a couple of jumpers with the hot hand. And by the way, this year, egregiously bent rims. Egregiously bent rims. I could tell, you know, it's not my first Marshfield Fair. I can tell when they really manipulated those rims. Those rims were about as bad as I've ever seen. I still knocked a couple down. I got George this giant sloth. Like, it's bigger than him. He had this little wagon. We were pushing him around in. The sloth took up the entire thing. And I won something. I forget, like a rubber ball or something. I don't know. Something at the fair. But boy, was it hot out there. Oh, it was really, really hot. But I love the Marshfield Fair. I've been going there ever since I was a kid. I was talking with Lou about this the other day, actually. Brag. And he's, you know, Marshfield guy. But he was telling me, and we were reminiscing about, at the Marshfield Fair, there used to be a horse track right in the middle of it. Like when you first walk in, if you go through the side entrance there, when you first walk in, you come up through all the food vendors and the fried dough and the mozzarella sticks and all that stuff. And on the left, there are these little bleachers. And they look out at now what I think is just a parking lot. I don't think there's anything there anymore. But it used to be a horse track. And when I tell you it was some of the saddest horse races you've ever seen in your life, it was the last stop these horses had before the glue factory. They'd come to Marshfield and they'd race at the Marshfield Fair. And I remember I had an old babysitter at the time. Both my parents worked, and my babysitter would take me there with her boyfriend, and the boyfriend would let me pick the horses. And that was a great core memory that every time I go back to the Marshfield Fair, it gets unlocked. Now, I understand that the last couple of years at the fair, they use the horse track as like for a demolition derby or something. This year, I don't know. It's the end of the fair. Like today, I think it's the last day. And we were there yesterday. So whatever they were using it for, it's not anything now. It looked like it was just all paved over. But the bleachers are still there, and that little window's still there, and it's still nice to see. Anyway, that's what I did yesterday in the wake of another Red Sox beatdown of the New York Yankees. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Rich in Western Mass. Hey, Rich.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I think sending Buehler to the bullpen was a little bit premature. I don't think we really fully know what we have in May yet as well. And another thing is I don't know why they sent Cooper Criswell down. I mean, I think it was premature for them to do that. Secondly, if you've noticed Sedan Rafael's batting average when he plays second versus when he's been always playing in the center field, it's completely different. I don't totally get that. And the last point I want to make is these last games before the playoff race, you really want to see the Red Sox be in the top wild card spot because you want them to play at home. Their on the road record is not good, but their home record is very good. And among the teams in the playoffs right now, the Red Sox have the worst road record. So I really want them to get that top wild card spot or hopefully take over the Blue Jay spot for the division.
And all right.
Those are my points for today.
Very good. Thanks for the call, Rich. Thanks for checking in. Good stuff. You're right about Rafaela in the splits. No question about it. He is, when he plays second base, he cannot hit the ball. It's not been that many. He's only played, I don't know how many games, but it's about 70 at-bats. It's actually 69 at-bats. Nice. He's averaged 130 batting average. On base is 167, slugging 145. For you math majors out there, that is an OPS of 312. Ugh. That's a tough OPS, boy. The reason why they move him around like that, though, is because they can. Because they can. And they think that having all these different options and guys who they can move to different positions, opening up opportunities for certain guys and certain matchups and mixing and matching, the Red Sox this year are very into mixing and matching. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how the lineup's always different? I mean, it's pretty apparent. And yes, Sedan Rafaela probably shouldn't be at second base, but they don't have a lot of better options right now. And they have guys who can play in the outfield. Not as good as Rafaela can. And the drop-off at the plate is certainly a real thing, too. I just gave you the numbers. In center field, he's either played center field or second base this year. He's had 364 at-bats at center field. He's hitting 272 with a 790 OPS. At second base, 130 with a 312 OPS. I mean, it's two different guys. And I don't also think that that's great for Rafaela, that when he's playing one position, he can hit, and when he's playing another position, he can't. It's like, well, what the hell is that? Can you just forget what position you're playing and just hit the ball? But, you know, some guys can't do it. Some guys just have that sort of baseball players. Baseball players are kind of crazy. Baseball players are very high strung. Out of all the pro athletes, I'd say your average baseball player is more high strung, superstitious, and they have to be. They're playing every single day. They're playing every day. And even the great ones are failing 70% of the time. You know, like that's got to weigh on you. That's got to just turn you into a basket case over the course of the season. We're in August right now. These guys have been going for 4.5, 5 months, failing, going up there, striking out almost every single time they're up. I don't mean that specifically to the Red Sox, just in general, all baseball players. They're all going up there making outs like 70, 80% of the time, some more than that. They're up there failing every day. That's got to weigh on you. It really does. No other sports really like that. Basketball, you know, field goal percentage, if your field goal percentage drops below 40%, then you're not playing in the NBA anymore. You know, so yeah, okay, you're missing 60% of the time, but you know, some guys aren't. Football, you know, if you can't throw the ball accurately, if you're missing on throws that much that you're 1 for 10 or something, then yeah, okay, you're 3 for 10, you're not gonna be out there. But in baseball, you just fail and fail and fail and fail and fail every single day all year. And that's why baseball players are kind of touched. They all are. Every baseball player I've ever met has been a little touched in the head. And I don't blame them at all. It's a punishing, punishing game. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to JP in North Providence. What's up, JP?
Remember, it's been a minute.
It's been way too, JP, it's been way too long, first of all, before you get to your point. It's been way too long. I know you're calling Jones and Keefe in the midday. I hear you calling them. You forgot all about me, JP.
No, it's another story. One of my other favorite guys is on opposite you, so I try to do loyalty that I would not call two shows in a night, but it's so great to hear you, and a couple of things. You were down in Marshfield. You should have went John the Baptist down at Brant Rock. You could have been, you know, inducting some people there down at the water with the rocks.
Sure.
Would have been fantastic. Oh, my mind, I'm all over the board. First of all, hearing the Dong report has made my summer.
Good.
But the only thing is, I'm like Russell Crowe in Numbers and Signs or whatever that movie was called. You're coming up with home runs. My mind's going Numbers, the whole thing. That is a great, great segment. You want to talk about basketball, trying to win stuffed animals? Old Orchard Beach with that damn three-point shot that's like 100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
After $40 I finally gave up 3 years ago, slipped the guy a 10 and said, give me the damn stuffed animal, my date, I'm looking back. I wasn't even hitting. I couldn't even reach it. I don't know if the ball fit in, so I feel for you. Here's the important question.
All right, JP.
Do we have to put Derek Crochet in the dungeon to get through the rest of the season? Can they drain out his starts? Because if he keeps pitching this many innings, I'm nervous. How do we protect him? Where do they put him?
All right, thanks for the call, JP. I'm not worried about Garrett Crochet. I'm not. I understand why you might be. I can understand why that may be a legitimate concern here for a guy that at 26 years old is pitching more innings than he's ever pitched before. Absolutely. It's not like he's throwing a ton of pitches. He's made four starts this month, 388 pitches, not even 100 pitches per start. Last month, 398. The month before that, he made six starts, 604. So that time, he crossed it that time. And there's been others where he got close, others where he was way under. The innings, I'm not as concerned about as the pitch count. And I feel like the pitch count has been representative so far of a guy of his age, in his prime, his strength, and doesn't seem to be really slowing down at all. So I'm not going to preemptively start worrying about Garrett Crochet and treating him like how baseball treats every single good pitcher when they're young and throwing a lot of innings. I just don't care. He also already had the surgery. There was a time. It's too late to get into this, but there was a time where every single pitcher, they would put him in bubble wrap, and it didn't matter, right? Like, it didn't matter. They tried that with Steven Strasburg. They tried it with Tim Lincecum. They tried it with Buchholz. They tried it with all these guys, and it didn't matter. They all still ended up getting the Tommy John surgery anyway and missing a whole year, and that's just the way it went. You can't protect these guys. You can't. You can't go over the top. Now, there's a difference between that and Dusty Baker and running them all into the ground like he did with all those guys in the Cubs with Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood and everybody just, you know, throwing them out there for 120 pitches per start. I'm not saying do that either, but it doesn't seem like protecting these guys, going over the top to protect them, it just doesn't make a difference. Nothing really changes. Everybody has Tommy John surgery anyway. Sometimes they have it twice. If they're going to need it, they're going to need it. It doesn't matter if you put them in bubble wrap or not. You might as well get the innings from them. That's how I think about it. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Here is Thomas Crisafulli. He's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we will continue with our Red Sox conversation and with your phone calls, including how Red Sox fans took over Yankee Stadium yesterday. And it's about time. It's about time Red Sox fans started flexing again. Here's Thomas. Oh, man. I'd ask you to play it again, Thomas, but it might get X-rated up in here. It's Christian Arcan Show here, WEEI. You want to join the show, you can at 617-779-7937. That was Anthony Knobloch. Oh, sorry, Anthony Volpe trying to throw over to first base. What a weekend he's having, huh? I mean, really, like, that wasn't even the worst play that he's had so far. He's had that play where he threw behind. Who was it that was on second base and he threw behind him instead of going to first base? He tried to turn a double play with a runner on second.
It was Duran on second.
Who was it? It was Duran on second base and he tried to throw behind him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job. Good job, Anthony. Anthony is psyched out, man. Anthony is psyched out on that field. Sometimes there's opposing players that can't handle playing in Yankee Stadium. Going against the Yankees, I don't think Volpe can handle being on the Yankees. And we've seen that before. We've seen on the Red Sox, too. You see guys once in a while who just aren't cut out for this kind of market. A great example that I can remember would be Edgar Renteria, who was on the Cardinals and who was great on the Cardinals. Edgar Renteria was a great shortstop for St. Louis. And then he comes on, and I think he was with the Marlins before that, I want to say. Marlins, Cardinals, Red Sox. And after going from friendly St. Louis to not-so-friendly Boston, Edgar Renteria realized what it was like. And it wasn't a good match, it wasn't a good fit, and there's been a lot of examples of those over the years. I think Anthony Volpe, despite the fact that he was knighted pretty much by Steinbrenners and the Yankee fans everywhere as the next big thing with the shortstop, he is a bit of a bust, a little bit of a bust there. And he's also melting down right in front of everybody against the Red Sox at a very tough time for that to be happening in a baseball season. The Yankees made plenty of other mistakes. Paul Goldschmidt had some errors. They're running into outs. They're a dumb team. The Yankees are a dumb team. And I'm comfortable saying that because I watched the Red Sox play as a dumb team for 3 months. Maybe even a little more than those 3 months. But right now, they're playing great right now. Right now, things are looking good. As a matter of fact, Buster Olney had an interesting tweet. Breaking down the Red Sox season into two halves, okay? And when you do that, it's 130 games, right? They played 130 games this season. In the first 65 games, they were 30-35. In the last 65 games, they're 41-24. And that 41-24 is the second best record in the majors over that span, behind the Milwaukee Brewers, who have clearly been the best team in baseball going on more than those 65 games. But for now, it's, you know, let's just say it. Are the Red Sox the second best team in baseball in the second half? It hasn't looked like that. I haven't felt that way, especially with Toronto and what they've done lately and how they sort of rocketed themselves into first place in the division. It really all sort of depends on where you want to draw the line in the sand, I guess. But it is noticeable that if you break this season down into two halves, the first half was obviously a big letdown. The second half, they've been, by record anyway, the second best team in baseball. It's interesting. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones, talk to Jack in Waltham. He has a thought on Walker Buehler. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Christian, thanks. I see the Walker Buehler move to the bullpen as a playoff move.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has value to the team. It's not as a starter. He's sort of like the fifth and a half starter that I see him as in terms of the skill level.
Right.
I remember after the All-Star game, that extended rest, his first start back was kind of strong. So if you pair him with someone, pitch him maybe every eighth day, if they want to save face and call that a bullpen day, even though it's still he's half in, half out of the rotation, I think it's a October-minded move because obviously last year that was his strength with the Dodgers. So getting him reacclimated with that role before it's actually crunch time, I think is kind of getting ahead of it. But I wouldn't be the most upset if he ate up some innings as a starter for the rest of this year.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel, Jack. Thanks for the call. You might be right. They might be doing something like that where they want to get Fitz in there. They call Criswell back up and they make a little fifth starter platoon thing going on there. I don't know. But I mean, you know, for what they have right now, for what they've been using him for right now, first of all, that adds another pitcher to the 25 man. And that's going to be, I don't want to say problematic because you don't know if it's going to be problematic or not until you start doing it. But it is going to take away when you really only need one guy to make that fifth start. Now you need two guys to be there for the fifth day. That seems unnecessary. And not only that, the Red Sox have had a hell of a time with that last bullpen spot. You know, Alcala and Moran and all these guys, Isaiah Campbell, these guys who have sort of jumped back up and down from Worcester lately and either gotten DFA'd or optioned back down because they're just not cutting it at the major league level. I don't know, Fitz maybe, Criswell, sure. I think Fitz has shown that he can handle major league competition. We've seen that from him, sure. But we haven't seen him go out and really dominate. And he had that long stretch where he was pitching well, but he wasn't getting any wins. And then he started pitching not as well. And it just, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of looking at a guy like Fitz and thinking, yeah, it'd be nice if he could contribute, but maybe that's the guy you call up and bring to the bullpen instead of kicking Buehler out of the rotation. I just, you know, I'm not sure exactly. I just not sure exactly what the plan is overall. Is this a thing that they're trying to get ready for October? Okay, sure. I don't see why you need to mess around with the back end of the bullpen when you're getting decent production from it. And it's not great. I'm not going to pretend like he's been great. But I was surprised. I thought that was an odd move. There was points in this season where DFAing Walker Buehler made a lot more sense than I would say it makes right now. Let's go to the phones again, 617-779-7937. Talk to Landon down on the Cape. Hey, Landon. Hello, Landon.
Hey, I've just got two questions. Is Roman Anthony going to get Rookie of the Year, and are we going to sweep the Yankees?
Okay, Roman Anthony for Rookie of the Year. I think he should be absolutely in the conversation. I'm not sure what the odds are right now, but I'm pretty sure Kurtz over there with the A's is still leading, I think maybe by a lot. But I think Anthony's creeping up on him there, Landon. As for are they going to sweep the Yankees tonight, they should. I think they will. Dustin May is pitching. He had two good starts in a row. I think he'll have a third one. And also, I think more than that, Landon, the Red Sox are in the Yankees' heads. I think the Yankees just have a mental block when it comes to playing Boston, and I think they're going to have a lot of trouble with them again tonight. Also, 12 runs yesterday. I think the Red Sox bats finally woke up.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call. Thank you, Landon. Thanks for checking in. I didn't mean to dang up there, but that's okay. Good call. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Sometimes it's hard to know. Let's try Daryl in New York. Go ahead, Daryl.
How's it going, Ken?
What's up?
Arcan, a huge Red Sox fan, been with him since 75, Carlton Fisk.
All right.
And I want to know what you think about the Bueller move, and was Isaiah Campbell DFA'd? Hopefully he was. And also, I want to know, was Criswell brought up yet? And if so, who was sent down?
Okay, Isaiah Campbell has not been. He got optioned back down. I'm not sure he got DFA'd. Criswell is in the minors right now, and I'll check and see. Yeah, Campbell was optioned down to AAA. He wasn't DFA'd, so he's still right. with Worcester.
Right.
And Criswell is still down there too.
Do you think they're gonna play the guy they just picked up at first base tonight, being that he's like hot as a pistol?
Yeah, I would think so. Thanks for the call, Daryl. I appreciate it. And yeah, I think Nathaniel Lowe, who you're talking about, who they got off the scrap heap from the Nationals, and who has been great. I mean, really, he's stepped right in and been great so far. Much, much better than I was expecting or anyone else was expecting. Rodon is going tonight, so maybe you have a matchup there. But even if it is, you know, with no ref Snyder, maybe they put the password to first base. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do. There's a chance, I guess, Lowe doesn't play tonight. But I would be surprised if they sit him. I think you just keep him out there until he cools off. I don't see any reason to mess with this. If for whatever reason, moving from a crap team like the Nationals to the Red Sox, I just talked about guys who maybe aren't ready for the spotlight. Nathaniel Lowe was ready to get the hell out of D.C. He was ready to get out of there and go to a real team. You could tell. He was wasted on that team in D.C. And there's a lot of examples of guys like that, and that's why generally when trades get made at the deadline and it's talented players and they're going from some crap dead-end team to a team in contention, they start contributing right away just because they're happy for the opportunity and they're talented and they know that they're actually going to be working towards something now instead of, you know, the front office resenting the fact that they're hitting well because it means they'll have less of a draft pick, that type of thing, you know, like sort of a reverse major league type of deal. But either way, with this Red Sox team, these Yankees have an easier schedule towards the end. They got the White Sox. They got a bunch of series against bad teams, but they also have to play the Red Sox again, and the Red Sox, both teams have to play Toronto and Detroit again. So the Yankees, to me, have been a much more fraudulent team than the Red Sox. The Red Sox have been inconsistent. The Yankees have been fraudulent, and there's a difference there. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls right after this. That is the way it sounded last night in the South Bronx. Christian Arcan Show here at WEEI. Red Sox making mincemeat out of the Yankees for these last three games. And before we get back to your phone calls, I just wanted to say, I salute the Red Sox fans who were at the game yesterday and who took over the center field bleachers. I salute you for doing that. I'm sure it wasn't all easy for majority of that game, especially when you're outnumbered. And I know a little something about being outnumbered at Yankee Stadium. Quick story. You may have heard this one. But in 2003, I had a roommate in college who was from Connecticut, big Yankee fan. And him and I drove back from Colorado back to Connecticut. And we moved all our stuff out. And we were driving back because we're both in the East Coast, so we just drove together. And we get back. We go to a Yankee-Red Sox game that day, the day we got back. And it was Pedro pitching in Yankee Stadium. And the first two batters were Alfonso Soriano and Derek Jeter, and Pedro hit them both in the hands. Up and in, high and tight, up at the hands. First two batters of the game for the Yankees. And they both left the game, and they both went to the hospital. This was the first two batters of, not the game, because it was the bottom of the first inning, but it was the beginning of the game. And for the next eight innings, I've never been more afraid to be at a pro sports game than I was being wearing a Red Sox shirt at that game. I wasn't wearing a Pedro shirt. I think it was like a Manny shirt or something. David Ortiz, I forget. But I was there. It must have been Manny because it was 2003. Ortiz wasn't Ortiz yet. But after that, and the Red Sox lost, I was getting popcorn dumped on me. I had friends there who were Yankee fans, and that didn't matter. People didn't care that there were Yankee fans around me. It was hostile. So I salute you out there, Red Sox fans, who were there that and got to take over the bleachers and mock that stupid roll call that they do and all that other crap. Good for you. Because for too long, really for the last 3 years, but it goes back further than that, other teams' fans have just been waltzing into Fenway Park, haven't they? Waltzing on into Fenway, taking over the stands. You see more of their colors than you see of the Red Sox, and they're cheering really loud whenever their team, whenever the Mets do something or whenever the Dodgers do something. You hear all these fans. Yankee fans have been doing it, too. They've been coming to Fenway, taking over the place. But not this year, they haven't. Not this year, they haven't. No, 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 no. This year, they were heading for the exits in the sixth. This year, yesterday, Red Sox fans had the entire bleachers on lock by the time you got to, you know, the seventh inning stretch. That's what I like to see. That's what I like to see. Don't get in fights. Don't punch anybody, but I do like to see that. 617-779-7937. I feel like I always have to, like, add that. Whenever I'm talking about how I like fans being lively and aggressive and all that, I always have to be like, and also don't fight anyone. Like, let's not be like the Giants and the Dodgers. Let's all just relax. And for the most part, I think people do. But either way, just a little disclaimer there. 617-779-7937 is your phone number if you want to jump in. We are going to switch gears to the Patriots in just a moment, but to close out our Red Sox-Yankee conversation here is Matt in Rhode Island. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what's up, Arkan? Do you remember in 18, Mookie Betts had that long, at bat with the Blue Jays, ended with an emphatic home run, kind of like the home run of that season? Not sure if you do remember that, but
vaguely I remember that. In 2018, you say?
I thought it was 2018, but I could be wrong. Anyway, right. My point was, I think that home run Anthony hit Thursday night might be one you look back at if this team goes and goes. You know, that was just kind of a big, big moment because the game was not well played. Hamilton got picked off, et cetera. But the ninth inning yesterday was so great when you put up seven innings, but also you did find a place of non-leverage for Justin Hicks.
Yes.
Which is great.
Jordan
and,
Hicks, yes.
And just three things I wanted to go at the Yankees at. You brought up Volpe. That kid's wearing it. They're booing him every time he comes up.
Mm.
You got Ben Rice, the kid from Massachusetts.
From Nobles,
he plays
yeah.
first base, but they told him, grab your catcher gear for Thursday night. That must have been awesome for him.
Yeah.
And then every time Will Fleming says he's not going to disrespect anyone, he goes at Giancarlo Stanton several times, and he's he's platooning as an over 50 right field softball player out there in right field.
Yes.
Thanks, RK. Have a great
Thank
day.
You. Matt, great to hear from you, buddy. Good call. All that was true, too. I just looked up Mookie Betts' 2018 home run Toronto Blue Jays, and I think this is what he was talking about. July 12, 2018, a 13-pitch at-bat ending with a grand slam, like a tape-measure grand slam over the monster. I vaguely remember this. But, the 2018, I mean, there's a lot of moments in that season, I'd say, because they were so good from the first series of the season. I think they played Tampa in the first series, and just they never slowed down after that. They just steamrolled everybody all season long. It was really remarkable what they did in 2018. The more time passes between then and now, I mean, I was saying at the time it was the greatest Red Sox team of all time, but when you're in the moment, you get caught up in it. They really were the best Red Sox team of all time, and I don't mean that to disrespect 2004. But 2004 was a wild card team. Like, if we're talking about who was statistically, like, the most dominant Red Sox team of all time, it was the 2018 Red Sox. It was. By wins and several other metrics. But if you want to talk about, like, vibes and feels and all that, then yeah, fine, we can say 2004. But if we're talking, like, numbers, 2018, that was the best Red Sox team there's ever been in the history of the Red Sox. And yeah, that was a nice grand slam. I do vaguely remember that. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We got time for one more, so let's go ahead and talk to John in Attleboro. Go ahead, John.
Hey, I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on the Red Sox kind of being the Grim Reapers this year? I know, that Rays series, they swept them before the deadline. They were still in the mix. I think they're ahead of us beforehand. You know, when we sweep them, they're now, how many games? 5 games under 500. The Twins, they were kind of out of it, but Jordan Hicks, that bummy, blew one game, but you had that 13-1 game, that whole fiasco. They started selling right after that. You think if we sweep the Yankees here today, it's kind of more so they're going to fall off a cliff and collapse, or more so that they were just in their own heads? Thanks.
Thanks for the call, John, and that's an interesting question. I do think the Red Sox, I don't know, what you're talking about sort of describes like them playing spoiler, and they're not a spoiler, they're a wild card team too, but I don't think that's really what you meant. Like, are they going around ending seasons for these teams that are right there on the brink? And I would say right now, probably not, you know, like Kansas City, they took 3 out of 4 from Kansas City in August, and the Royals hung around. You know, they bounced back after that, and they're still in the mix. I mean, they're not killing it right now or anything like that, but I wouldn't say the Red Sox ended their season. They had a tough stretch against San Diego. San Diego's riding high. Houston, they lost 2 out of 3, too. You know, like, they lost those 2 games to Baltimore. The teams that they've beaten, in some cases, have gone on to go in a bit of a hole. I don't know if that's going to happen with the Yankees. And it's not because I think the Yankees are good, but it's because the Yankees have a pretty easy schedule going forward. I think the Yankees going forward have the White Sox. They have 2 series against the White Sox. Let me pull it up. It's easier than the Red Sox. Yeah, after they're done with the Red Sox, the Yankees host the Nationals. Then they go to Chicago for 4 against the White Sox. That's a nice 7-game stretch right there. I'd say right there in those 7 games. The Yankees are frauds when it comes to playing good teams. They're going to beat the Nationals and the White Sox. Like, that's, you know, I'm not worried about that. Everybody beats the Nationals and the White Sox. That's not anything. So even if they spiral a little bit right now, and clearly the Red Sox are in their heads, I don't think they're in their heads so badly that they won't be able to remember how to beat Washington and Chicago. After that, they got Houston, Toronto, Detroit. That's a tough 9-game stretch right there. Then they have the Red Sox again. So that's 12 games. After those 7, they better feast on Washington and Chicago. Because after that, they got a really, really tough stretch. That's 12 against Houston, Toronto, Detroit, and Boston. And those are teams that they do not play well against. The Yankees' record against those teams is pathetic. After that, though, it goes Minnesota, Baltimore, Chicago, Baltimore. And we'll see if the Orioles keep on surprising people. They're in the midst of getting swept right now by the Houston Astros. And while they do seem like kind of a plucky, feisty little team there, Baltimore does, I don't really believe in them. They're a team with a bunch of young players, and they got another youth movement coming up behind them. So what? Like, how seriously can you really take them? I guess we'll find out. Red Sox play them next, so we'll see if that's still going on or not. But let's say Houston puts them back in their place, and they go back to being just, you know, the crappy team in the AL East. Then that's good news for the Yankees and also for the Red Sox to some extent. But I don't think the Yankees are just going to go away. They do have a tough stretch, but it's surrounded by pretty easy teams and some easy wins. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. All right, we're going to put the Red Sox and the Yankees on pause. We're going to take a quick pause. I've been beating up the Yankees for 2 straight hours, okay? I'm going to take a little break, and we're going to talk New England Patriots with Tom King of the Nashua Telegraph, who also just so happens to be a Yankee fan, so I lied, actually. We will bring that back up with him as well. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up next here on WEEI.